HarperCollins and Harper Audio present Operation Biting, the 1942 Parachute Assault to Capture Hitler's Radar by Max Hastings. Read by Max Hastings and John Hopkins.
With love and admiration for Margaret Macmillan, OMCHOC, who possesses every quality as a historian to which others of us aspire.
Introduction, read by Max Hastings. A conversation took place during the small hours of the 26th of October 1941 between Winston Churchill and General Sir Alan Brooke, the head of the army. For the convenience of the nocturnal Prime Minister, though inconvenience of his diurnal companion. Churchill observed that a man's life is akin to a walk down a long passage with closed windows on either side. As you reach each window, an unknown hand opens it, and the light it lets in only increases by contrast the darkness of the end of the passage. In those bad days of the Second World War, and ahead of Pearl Harbor, they were still almost unremittingly bleak for Britain. Even the Prime Minister, with his passion for offensive action, could identify scant opportunities for initiating big operations against the Axis. The end of the passage, the path to Allied victory, remained opaque. 4 days after Churchill's remark to Brooke, he felt obliged to write to General Sir Claude Auchinleck in Cairo that Whipcord, a plan to invade Sicily, must be abandoned as beyond the compass of our stride. The greatest conflict in human history was not conducted at an even tenor of ferocity, anguish, sacrifice. In every belligerent society, with the possible exception of Russia, there were lulls in the slaughter, significant periods when nothing momentous took place. The term phony war was coined to describe the period between September 1939 and April 1940, when the French and German armies, together with a relatively small British expeditionary force, confronted each other in passivity. But there were other phony wars later, when not much happened, measured against the standard of Stalingrad 42 or Normandy 44. Following 1940 defeat in France, Britain remained fiercely engaged at sea and in the air. On land, however, while relatively small imperial contingents fought the Germans and Italians in the desert, and thereafter also the Japanese in Southeast Asia, most of the British Army was confined to its home islands, rearming and training for a resumption of the continental struggle against major German armies, which would not take place until the final year of the war. This did not mean that Britain's warlords were idle. Alan Brooke, who became Chief of the Imperial General Staff in December 1941, faced the relentless strain inseparable from strategy making and the new partnership with the United States. Nonetheless, many would-be battlefield commanders were left chafing in remote regions of the United Kingdom, eager to engage the foe and exercise the career opportunities that war had opened to them, while having no scope to do so, as they merely inspected training, supervised exercises, and awaited the deliveries of weapons, vehicles, and equipment which alone could fit their formations to fight the Germans or Japanese. At all costs, however, and being especially mindful of American public opinion, Churchill was insistent that Britain's home army should not be seen to be entirely idle. He pressed for raids on the continent, pursuing objectives which might fulfill useful purposes, or sometimes attacking targets that had no value at all. They were merely accessible to small amphibious forces. Many generals recoiled from this sort of petty piracy, and on the other side, the Wehrmacht declined to bother with it.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?